Welcome back to the Localization Fireside Chat, everybody, and good to see you again. Happy Friday to everybody. Today is May 29th, 2026, and I am your host, Robin Ayoub. Obviously, I don't need to introduce myself, but sometimes for those new of you who are joining the channel, and I hear that you guys are joining the channel on a weekly basis, brand new listeners, brand new viewers, thank you for that. I really appreciate it. Today's guest, Peter McCarroll. Peter joined he reached out to me after he listened to the episode number 200 with Jürgen Dauch. And I'm not sure if you guys recall that episode, but Jürgen is based in Germany. We did a lot of conversation around the system thinking and how do we think we go from a process to a system think when it comes to management, et cetera. So how do you compartmentalize this and how do you productize it? Which told me right away that this conversation is a real conversation that took place with Jürgen. And I'm happy to say that we're going to have an interesting conversation today with Peter. We're going to get to know him a little bit. We're going to get to know what he does and the story that he brings to the Localization Fireside Chat. Peter is a chartered accountant in New Zealand and a CPA in Canada and founder of AI Accountant, and he is the owner of Fuel Accountant. Peter has spent past 2 years doing something most people only talk about, actually developing it optionally, not because he was pushed toward it, but he wanted to operationalize AI in his space and in his work and practice as well. And he did not just do it as a pilot or as a proof of concept. He wanted to build something meaningful and put the platform to use in his practice. Peter, welcome to the Localization Fireside Chat.
Thank you.
And let's get into it. Before we get into the conversation, Peter, if you don't mind, as we say on this channel, everybody's got a story. What's your story? What got you here?
Yeah, well, like I always tell everyone I'm a little bit unique. Some say crazy. I just say unique. I was born in New Zealand. I now live in Toronto. How did I get to Toronto from New Zealand? People often ask me, why would I leave New Zealand? I came to Toronto in 1994. I was working for Deloitte and met a woman and dragged her around the world. And my standing joke is they finally found us and made me bring her home again. So we're back in her hometown. And we've got 4 kids and really enjoying the environment up here in the Toronto area. I grew up as a CPA or a chartered accountant in New Zealand. My dad was an accountant. His dad was an accountant. So I think it's in the blood somewhere. Although, funnily enough, none of my kids have any interest whatsoever. So I don't know. Maybe it's going to skip a generation. I hope so. But yeah, so I started working for his firm when I was in university. And then I got a job with Deloitte. I spent 11 years with Deloitte before taking a break from accounting and then coming back to start my own practice.
So you're in Toronto right now. Do you have your own office? And how big is your company? Is it like an individually run or you have like...
In my part of the firm where it was sort of a hybrid firm with a US colleague, I've got about 10 staff sitting across 3 countries.
And what is the basis of your business? What customers do you serve, et cetera?
Yeah, so we're a full service small business accounting firm. So we do bookkeeping, tax, compliance, reporting, business coaching. We're Profit First certified. So we spend a lot of time coaching clients on how to improve cash flow management. And we serve mainly the family owned business market.
Okay. All right. And you operate in many countries, you said, right, Peter?
Yeah. So I'm licensed in New Zealand and Canada. And I've got a colleague who is in the US. So he serves US clients. I serve New Zealand and Canadian clients.
Well, that covers quite the chunk of economies,
I
guess.
It's a pretty big geography. New Zealand is this tiny little segment of it. So geographically. So
never been to New Zealand. I've got a relative who lives in New Zealand. And I'm always, every time we talk, they're always telling me how beautiful it is. Sort of reminds them of Canada, but on a smaller scale, obviously.
Yes.
Which is great. Well, good to have you on the show again, Peter. Take me back, if you don't mind, to May 2024. What did you see inside your own practice that made you say, I can't wait for this profession to figure this out?
Yeah, so it wasn't something I saw inside my practice. It was something I was listening to. And, I listened to podcasts and YouTube channels, and I was hearing, about this ChatGPT thing. I'd never touched it. And I've always been technology forward. I grew up with the first personal computers. I was at the bleeding edge of cloud technology. I mean, Xero was created in my hometown and was an early adopter of Xero. I've been using it for 15, 16 years. So I always, prided myself on being this technologically advanced, first mover category. And I realized that our firm had become stagnant. What used to be novel was now normal. And we were now just normal. And I was hearing the stuff about AI and having seen the movement of technology over time, I was fully convinced that the horror stories they were saying would come. That this was not just pie in the sky stuff, that this is where the technology is going. Now, how long is the only question? It was never a question of if, it was only a question of when. And so I started reflecting on what does that mean for my business? And I had this incredibly vivid picture of me sitting on the side of the road with my head in my hands and my desk and papers just scattered all over the road as this truck had just driven through my business.
That's quite the image, Peter.
It is. And I decided then that I didn't want to be the guy sitting on the side of the road. I wanted to be the guy driving the truck.
That's quite powerful.
It is. So that's when I decided I need to start learning this AI stuff. And it's been like, it's a slow ramp up, you know, for the first, you know, like the rest of that year, I got training. I joined a group that focuses on AI. I learned as much as I could about it. I then taught my staff. So I put myself through the training. Then I put my staff team through the training. Then I started teaching clients about AI and how to use AI. And of course, back then it was all about prompt engineering, you know, which isn't the way I do it today. But, you know, that was my journey. I basically said, I want to become an expert as best I can. And the thing about being an expert as an AI is no one is an expert because what you learned yesterday is outdated tomorrow. So, you know, it's moving so fast. And so then I started writing about AI and particularly about AI in the accounting practice, very slow, you know, not fast enough. And so I now have this brand of the AI accountant, and my mission with this brand is to communicate the urgency, but also the process to other CPAs like myself in practice, dealing with clients Monday through Friday about what do we need to do to not be the guy sitting on the side of the road crying because AI wiped out my business.
You know, I run a networking event. We just finished a call this morning at 9 o'clock. We call it the AI Exchange. And this is where practitioners and people who are interested in the topic, who are working on the topic, some of them are data scientists, some of them are experts, some of them are just entrepreneurs trying to figure out what to do with AI in the world that they live in from their own perspective. You know, I invite you to participate in that or send somebody from your office or whatever you like. Mm-hmm. It's pretty interesting and dynamic group we talked about. And today, the main topic was the AI, the moonshot, meaning that what I wanted to talk about with the group is that, look, everybody's doing something incremental with AI. You know, you're managing, you're drafting emails, you're analyzing spreadsheets, however you want to do it, those little incremental things. But what is the 10X idea that AI can help you build? And that's what everybody's trying to figure out. And there's many examples out there. You know, there are many companies out there, they're valued in the $400 million right now. They started in 2024, you know, out of an idea. And when you ask, like, how many employees you have, like one or two, maybe three employees, the whole thing runs on agents, AI agents. So there are possibilities out there, and there are a lot of things we can learn. You said something very interesting, Peter, I talk about quite often, is that I call it the expiry dates of a statement in AI right now. So anything we say today changes tomorrow. You know, technology is moving faster than we can even blink. Those engineers are completely changing the dynamics on a 24-hour interval. So we'll see how that evolves. Now, you've spent 2 full years deploying AI inside Fuel Accountants before building the platform. And I would love to know a little bit more about the platform. What did those 2 years teach you that you couldn't have learned on your own way?
Well, I mean, it was on my own way. It was a journey in progress. And I'd have to say it was very slow to start with. You know, we started with just, you know, trying to have our staff experiment and do their own thing. And what we found was that most staff didn't do that. Of my entire team, only one person was willing to really go beyond the surface level. And that's not unusual at all. The best way that I'm finding, because it's a work in progress, is to be able to create deliverable workflows to your team rather than just having them, you know, expecting them to be able to find it for themselves. One of the problems I often talk about, I call it the dashboard problem. You know, I have one of my, you know, my team come to me and she created this dashboard in Claude and it was wonderful. And I'm like, absolutely, this is the sort of thing we want. But where does the data come from? And how do we deploy it? And how do we quality control it? And she hadn't, of course, thought of any of those things. She just had Claude spend 20 minutes building a dashboard and thought we could now roll this out. And you know, anyone that spent, you know, more than a few hours trying to do something in AI realizes very quickly that the first version is great, but deploying it is hard. And so that's one of the challenges I'm trying to, you know, to look at when I'm building out, you know, the work I'm doing with other accountants, but also the tools that I'm building, is how do we deploy? So that's the biggest challenge, I think, for any business in AI. You know, right now, what we've got is we've got a range of different skills or prompts that are available to my team that help them either be more efficient or higher quality. Yeah, you know, a lot of what I do talk about is not just about saving money, about doing things faster, but how do we use AI to do things better? That might take longer, but we get a better result out of it. So, So that's what I've been working on within the firm. And then in the platform, I'm working on two sort of parallel initiatives. One is a software product that brings AI into the center of the firm so that everything you do is based around a knowledge base of everything we know about a client. Because right now, in the accounting firm, that's all up here in the partner's brain. Okay. So we call it practice brain, where we start with the knowledge we know, and then we do work with that knowledge. And then the other area is training accounting practices around this idea of how do we transform our practice? How do we go from a business that's tinkering with AI on the side to a business model that actually uses AI at the center and positions ourselves to survive what's coming? So part of it's training and leadership. Part of it is tools.
How does the staff take it? How does your employees take this initiative? What do they think of it?
Initially, they were excited by it. You know, the opportunity to learn something new. They all did the training. They all liked the training. You know, when you get down to the brass tacks of, look, I've got a job to do and I don't have time to spend experimenting, you know, they gravitate back to doing the job. I have to say the speed of change in the last few months is starting to worry them. And we're going to talk about Sequoia shortly. They are starting to get a little afraid. And I keep trying to assure them that no one's going to lose their job. We're a small team. We've got plenty of opportunity. No one's going to lose their job because of AI, but yet they're seeing this pace of change and they're starting to get worried.
I would imagine there'd be some resistance, but you're qualifying it as being worried. Does that equal resistance?
I'm not sure it's resistance. I think it's concern.
Concern. Okay.
Concern. Yeah. And no one in my team is pushing back saying I don't want to do this, you know, or actively sabotaging. That's what resistance typically looks like.
Because there are some studies out there, Peter, that point to the Gen Z sabotaging AI deployment because they're afraid of losing their jobs.
Yeah, I haven't seen any evidence of that within my team, and my team are mostly younger people. You know, those of us with gray hair, or my business partner who has no hair. You know, we understand the importance of this conversation, and, you know, we could have taken, you know, the ostrich approach and put our head in the sand, or we could embrace it. And we've both chosen to embrace it. So I'm really thankful for that. But, you know, the younger group, they're into it. They want to learn it, you know, but they're still worried. They know what's coming. They like I did. Yeah, they see where this is going, and they wonder what they'll be doing a few years from now. And so I see this as an employer. Our job is to bring our people with us.
Yep.
For ways to replace them.
Pull them along the journey, basically. Yeah.
So we talk about climbing the advisory ladder. We've got to go from being a compliance focused firm. We already do a lot of advisory, but we've got to go from a firm that spends 80% of our time doing compliance to a firm that spends 20% of our time doing compliance.
Totally.
And they have to be able to come with us. And yeah, there are some that might not be able to make that.
Let's talk a little bit about Sequoia. So you ran the Sequoia Disruption Target webinar in March to a live audience of practitioners.
Yes.
Walk me through the investment thesis here. Why should an accountant care what Sequoia Capital is investing or funding?
Yeah, so I mean, I call it a manifesto. You call it a thesis. I guess it's just perspective. Sequoia is one of the biggest VC firms in the US. They are behind a number of really big brands like Stripe. And so they know how to deploy capital and how to take advantage of opportunity. One of their Sequoia partners in March wrote a paper that basically said, for every dollar that's spent on software, so this is the SaaS model, for every dollar spent on a software product, $6 are spent on services. And basically what he was saying was that it's time to stop trying to build a better buggy whip with software. Let's just replace the services. And his first example was, rather than trying to build a better QuickBooks, we'll just build the tool that closes the books. That was their first example of what they could do. And then they ran through a number of factors on, you know, how they look at the market and what their signals are for a market that's ready for disruption. And everything they talked about had accounting and bookkeeping and tax preparation square in the head. And one of the things they said that I don't think accountants, and to be honest, any other knowledge professional truly understands, is that what we call judgment, we think, and this is the response I get from a lot of accounting firms is, well, professional judgment, that's what differentiates
professional judgment. That's what I keep hearing quite a bit, actually.
Exactly. And Sequoia hinted at this, and the paper wasn't very long, but they hinted at this idea that the vast majority of professional judgment is simply ingrained rule following. I know how to prepare a T2, a corporate tax return in Canada,
yep,
because I've done hundreds of them. I know how to do a 1040 in the US, you know, if you're a US accountant, because you've done thousands of them. You understand the tax code because you've lived it and applied it year after year after year. There was a time when that knowledge was not attainable by anybody else who hadn't gone through that process. That time is gone because AI can follow rules really, really well. It can learn those rules faster than you or I can.
Mm.
And so this idea that our professional judgment is going to protect us when 85% of what we call professional judgment is just ingrained rule following, that's what's at risk for us. And what we have to work out is what's that 15%? That really is judgment, really is client context, really is reading the room, not just reading the numbers, and make that our 85%.
So I did target this topic in the discussion today, and I call it the 80-20 rule, but you moved it to 85-15.
A little more aggressive, 85-15. Yeah, absolutely.
But the theory is there, and the idea is actually valid, where if you can map out the professional, what we consider at this stage of our life as a humanity, professional assessment or professional judgment into algorithmic or into some rule base that you can apply in a technology, that's scary. I mean, well, scary. I mean, maybe not scary, but it is efficient if you're looking at it from an efficiency perspective, because now it can replicate what a human knows and maybe amplify it. But if it's not, if you're going to look at it from the flip side of things, or you say, oh, you're going to replace me using a, you know, if you're the individual being impacted by the whole thing. And, you know, I'm drawn to the, you know, distinction that I really find very interesting, where AI isn't your competition. The startups funded to replace you are. So if somebody comes up with an idea and says, I'm going to fund this company, may put somebody out of business, not necessarily because the owner of the company or the boss of the company or the CEO of the company decided to use AI internally, but some other idea from the outside can come in and replace the entire company.
Absolutely. And I talk a lot about compression and price compression, particularly in the accounting space. And one of those compression factors are these new tools. You know, even from the products we use every day, as accountants, we spend a lot of time in tools like QuickBooks and Xero. And QuickBooks and Xero are both deploying tools that will eventually replace a bookkeeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
The tools that we use every single day are also working us out of a job, potentially. You know, so, and of course, then you have that Sequoia idea of we're going to fund people that not just build better tools, that actually complete work, because AI can now do work, not just display stuff on a screen and process transactions. It can now make judgments. And
100%.
That's what these tools are doing. They're not building a better, engine. They're building something that could actually think and make decisions. Well, that's judgment. That's what we've been relying on as our moat, and that moat is very shallow.
Very shallow. Now, tell me, you hear this all the time, and for the audience, maybe it helped clear out, coming from somebody in your capacity, Peter. They say AI is not good at numbers. Doesn't do addition, multiplication, simple arithmetic very well. What has been your experience in that topic?
Well, certainly up until late last year, I would have totally agreed with that. It's called a large language model, not a large numerical model.
And yeah.
And that made sense. It's got so much spark, you know, like in the last 6 months. I mean, I haven't had a chance to play with the new Opus 5.8 yet, but you know, it's got so much, or 4.8, it's got so much smarter, and it handles numbers now an awful lot better. I use Claude regularly. That's my engine of choice. And, you know, it will write a Python script when it needs to. And Python does numbers really well. So an LLM is no longer merely a word processing language model. It's a logic model that processes language exceptionally well and now brings to bear other tools like Python to handle skills that it doesn't have as natively. And so I think I would no longer say that it doesn't handle numbers well. It's not the best. It does make mistakes. But yeah. But it does it a lot better than it did 6 months ago.
Absolutely. And it's you can see the trajectory that we're on, right? It's improving. It's not stagnating. The efficiency of it is improving on a daily basis. And I can see that. Every day there's a new models out there. What are the four strategic moves that separate firms that absorbs, for instance, this change versus the one that is being displaced by these changes, in your opinion?
Four strategic moves. Well, the first is leadership. You've got to, first of all, take your head out of the sand. If you don't think there is a problem to be solved, you will be one of the guys sitting on the side of the road.
Yeah.
You've got to actually acknowledge where we are. And I'm the first to say, look, we're not there yet. I'm not telling everyone that the sky is falling and they've got to get an umbrella now. But this is moving so fast. And I'm convinced that it will move faster than we think it will and be better than we think it will. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day and I said, I think we've got one busy season left before the world as we know it will have changed. At best, we've got two busy seasons. So for those outside North America, when we talk about busy season, we're talking about January to April. Okay. And, you know, at best, we've got two. I think firms that haven't done anything by that second busy season are going to struggle because those pressures that I mentioned, pricing pressures, software pressures, you know, client perception pressures, they will be in full force and you will not be able to avoid it at that point. And it'll be too late to try and make massive change. So the first is leadership. You've got to be thinking about how do you reposition your firm? And it will look different 12 months from now, 24 months from now than it does today. The second is you've got to look at ways of bringing AI inside the firm, not on the edges. You've got to bring it inside. And this is not just about doing things faster. That's important. We want to do that. That's part of it, dealing with the compression, but that's a race to the bottom. You know, if you just try and be more and more efficient, someone else will be more efficient than you. We have to do it, but it's not the primary goal. Correct. And so what we have to do, you hinted at this earlier, is, you know, I talk about three levers for the use of AI in any business. There's cost, doing things faster and cheaper. There's strategic thinking. How do we use AI to help accelerate our thinking? And then there's growth. How do we use AI to create products, launch products that we weren't doing before? And I'm convinced that this is the area that every business needs to be thinking, not just accountants, but every business needs to be thinking about. If the world is going to change, what does that new world need? And how do we think about that kind of product differently than what we did before?
You know, there are some companies out there. I mean, many of them are listening to this podcast right now. They are experimenting, and their experimentation pretty much stays at the experimentation stage. It doesn't really move into operational. Why do you think that is? Like, how come they don't move to, let's put this together in a production environment?
Yeah, part of it is they haven't I think the biggest reason is they haven't dedicated enough time to working on this. And again, this is a leadership issue. I'm almost of the opinion now that every business needs a chief AI officer, just like they have a chief financial officer or a chief marketing officer. And in some cases, that those are all hats worn by the same person, if they're a small business. But you need to have a strategic role of looking at AI within your business. And that has to sit at the highest level of the organization, because it's not just about doing things faster. It's about how do we reorganize our business to not get squashed, but also to take advantage of this amazing opportunity. There are going to be thousands of businesses that will close because of AI, no question.
Oh, 100%. I mean, there are
thousands of businesses that are started on a brand new idea. And my call to anyone in business today is it doesn't have to be either or. Yeah, your business will change, but do you want to reinvent it now? Or do you want to be forced to have to create something new after your last business closed? Well, start reinventing. Start thinking about that now.
You have something called the Champion Plus Operator Framework. Talk to me a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah. One of the problems that I had with my, you know, I've got a relatively small team is I am the champion in the business for AI. And that's posing a challenge. I wish I had someone that was able to take that mantle off me and go and implement it within the business. For businesses that are slightly larger, you know, I'm talking to accounting firms, you know, 25 to 100 people. You've got to have someone in the firm that has that mantle of the AI champion. They are the thinker. They are the planner. They are the one that come up with the ideas. They are the ones that talk about transformation and what the business will do in the future. But they are often not the person that will actually go and do the work. So the champion and operator dyad is this idea. It's a little bit like the integrator and the visionary idea. Okay, the champion is the visionary and the operator is the integrator. Someone that can take the ideas and now go and do trial and error. And with AI implementation within the firm right now, that's a lot of what we're talking about. It's trial and error. And this is a reason why a lot of businesses don't actually get traction, is because they try something once, they don't get the results they wanted, and they just conclude that AI doesn't work for them.
Oh, 100%. You hear that all the time. I tried it. It doesn't work. It's stupid. Right. I don't know. Maybe we are stupid sometimes.
Well, we just need to keep trying the right, trying until we find the thing that works. And that's where, you know, if we have the resources to have the champion and the operator, the operator's job is to experiment, find the things that work and throw out the things that don't work. It's no different from typical product development and research. That's what we do, you know.
Yep.
But we often think that AI is supposed to be the silver bullet that does magic things. and when the magic, you know, when you rub the lamp and the genie doesn't come out, you wonder if the lamp is broken. Well, no,
yeah,
it's not broken. It's still a wonderful tool that does magic things. You just got to, you know, find that right fit, find that right experiment, and then be able to deploy that. Well, that takes time. And a lot of people don't give it enough.
I saw something you mentioned, gap work between platforms. And that you
AI
mentioned. Yeah. So you talk about communication, documents processing, advisory deliverables, et cetera. What does that look like for you, you know, after AI kind of thing? Is that still a valid thing, or are you trying to reduce it? What is it?
Yeah. So my concept of AI in the gaps is particular to accountants, but you can translate this to anything. So as an accountant, we spend a lot of time in the tools that we use. QuickBooks, for me, Xero. We're huge Xero practice. Could be Sage, you know, whatever accounting platform you're using. So a lot of our time is spent inside those tools. Well, we don't have the ability to put AI into that process. It's someone else's product. We don't own it. And both of all of these products are working really hard to put AI into these products. Some are having better results than others at the moment, hit and miss. But we have a lot of other things we do around the tools. Preparation for data that goes into the tools, other work that we do, reconciliations that may be done manually on a spreadsheet. And so if you're in a position like an accountant is, where you've got a primary tool that is not yet fully AI enabled, you start in the gaps between the tools. What are the things that you work on that go into those products? How do you convert data from one system to another system? AI is really, really good at that. How do you shortcut a process? Like maybe you have to move data between two systems, and how can you use AI to shortcut that process so that, again, this is an efficiency play, but, you know, looking at ways where if you can't control the system or influence the system, how do you build around it?
Yeah.
And these days, you know, again, 6 months is a long time in this space. You know, the whole idea of model context protocols, you know, being able to automate things through APIs is becoming really, really good. And so even though you may have tools that don't use AI within them, you can now do an awful lot outside that tool that pushes data in or pulls data out of those tools.
Oh, 100%. MCP is a valid protocol. Everybody's using it.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to a vendor just the other week, and you know, they don't have an API, they don't have an MCP. And I said, excuse me, this is 2026. You know, that's
yeah, where have you been for the past 2 years?
In fact, that's so 2019 to not have an API. It's like, this is now expected. And if you have a software product, if there's any software vendors out there and you're wondering, you know, why would people want one? It doesn't matter. You've got to build it.
Yeah.
Because these agents, you know, the best results people get is when they connect more things to their agents, to their Claude or their OpenAI, whatever it is, because it's not about saving time on one task. It's the network effect of being able to pull and push data from multiple systems, pull it, process it, push it inside a single tool. And you can't do that in any one of the tools.
100%.
Any one of the external systems.
100%. You need those technologies to work. And, you know, there's a lot of big theories going on right now, or a lot of ideas around SaaS.
Mm-hmm.
And if that software will survive the evolution that we're witnessing right now, the entire SaaS model could be obsolete in some cases.
Absolutely.
Don't know about all cases, but in some cases. Depends on which one we're talking about. I'm just going to put this on hold, and don't worry, we'll do through the edit. I just want to run, I got somebody on the door.
Sure.
Just going to put it on hold for 1 second. We'll cut that out, and we'll come back to you in a second, okay?
No worries.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
So the next topic I want to talk about is the compliance and in the context of compliance compressing the commodity. So you've got compliance, which we were talking about earlier, that entire value that human bring is that I know the compliance, I know the rules, I know the tax code in your case, etc. And how fast is this actually happening right now? Is there a timeline where you think, you know, you could make perhaps a partner who thinks that they have 5 years to sort this out? Is this uncomfortable to them? Are they thinking that they're going to be displaced? How fast is this moving to take that intellectual property that sits in somebody's brain in your world to make it a more commoditized, or I mean, I probably shouldn't use the word commoditized, to put it encapsulated into a process?
So it's already happening. QuickBooks and Xero and Sage are already building tools and agents directly into their products to do what bookkeepers and accountants have historically done. But that's been an ongoing process for 2 decades, okay. 3 decades even. So that's not new, but it's accelerating. So I think, to answer your question, I think we've got 2 years. 2 years before it will be mainstream that most of the work will be done by the system or by, you know, someone outside of an accounting firm. There's new products already on the market, like Digits. Digits just announced a 95% promise that if the system does not handle 95% of the transactions without human touch, you don't pay. That's a bold promise.
Wow, that's a very bold promise.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we've got other startups like Kik, you know, very much following on the heels of Digits. There was a new one called Synthetic that just received, you know, a whole bunch of money. And again, their stated purpose is to deliver closed books at $49 a month. No bookkeeper required. That's their stated purpose, not their incidental. So yeah, I think we've got about 2 years before the bookkeeping compliance model will have totally changed. Now, that doesn't mean that there'll be no bookkeepers or accountants doing compliance work. It means that the work that we do will have significantly changed. And I think we're moving away from transaction processing, which we have been doing for years already, into quality control and system monitoring. This is where the value adds. And at the end of the day, AI won't stand behind its work and sign a certificate.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why we have professionals. And so as a professional, our job changes from, well, we enter the data so we know it's right, to we have, not audit's the wrong word, we have monitored and quality controlled and corrected this data. And so now we can stand behind it.
Now, from a tax, you know, and policy, because they're attached to top policy, any tax law in any country is attached to tax policy, which is these policies are set by governments generally, and these policies or these rules are changing on a frequent basis. How do you accommodate for that? I mean, it's one thing to hard code what we know. We can't predict what we don't know. And these things are going to be updated all the time. And sometimes these changes from a tax code perspective are very detailed. It's not like a flip of a switch in a software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had someone reply to a LinkedIn post just yesterday, and they said, yeah, but the tax rules change every year. And my response is AI ingests those changes better and faster than we do. So yeah, I don't think the changing landscape or the tax, yeah, the changing tax policy is a barrier or a moat to AI adoption. I think AI actually handles that better than we do as humans. We have to do training courses. We have to, you know, sit down and think through the implications of those changes. AI will give you a written paper, analyze that transaction and tell you what to do faster than you could go and log into the course software.
You know, you bring a very valid point here, because one of the overarching idea that we talked about so far is that we have to change our thinking in the way we think about building software. We come from a generation where you define the problem, you put a solution around it. And until we get a new version of that software, we won't get another update on it. And generally these softwares get updated at once a year, whatever software you're trying to use, Windows included. But what we're talking about here is an ever evolving software. What you're talking about is my AI based software, or whatever you want to call it, agent and how application, it's connected to the outside world. It's monitoring these rules and these changes, and it's adapting its behavior based on the new rules and these changes. It's in the past, and you know, most software in the world are code lines hard coded inside of each software. And the only one time they get updated is when somebody unpacks it, recode it, and then pushes it back as an update.
Yeah, I think for the short term, we still need to have a slight little bit of that focus. We don't want AI you know, learning off the internet, because there's so much garbage on the internet, so much bad advice. Mm-hmm. So we still want to be able to control to a certain extent, you know, where it gets its data from. So I can still see for the next several years, you know, the AI being told, hey, here's where you get your authoritative rules from. And we feed that data into the system. However, again, the speed at which this is moving is so great that, you know, we're probably only 2 years away from, you know, it being able to tell what is truly garbage versus what is truly solid. And, you know, we will no longer need those guardrails in place because it will have learned, well, this is how I get my authoritative guidance. I don't go to Reddit to get advice on how to implement this tax rule, because Reddit's full of wannabes and people who just tell you how to cheat the system. But it looks like it's authoritative guidance. So, you know, it'll be smart enough to work that out. Right now, yeah, sometimes not.
Do you think we at some point it will evolve to a point we don't need guardrail? Is that what you're saying?
I think at some point that it will be able to work out the difference between, you know, the garbage and the authoritative stuff, just like we do. You know, we can, you know, if you're a professional, you read a thread and you instantly you go, hang on, that advice, that's stinky, that's not good advice. Or they haven't thought about this, they haven't thought about that. And you know what, just my favorite comment on any kind of tax question is, well, this is how I filed my return and CRA or IRS accepted it. I'm like, you idiot. They didn't accept it. They just didn't challenge it. There's a big difference between it. Don't go giving people advice based on what you got away with, because you could still go to jail.
That's right. That's right. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah. And again, that is an element of professional judgment that right now we have that sometimes AI doesn't.
Sure. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
I read something and the hair on the back of my neck goes up and I go, something smells off here. And we know it because, again, we've lived that experience so many times.
Yeah.
AI isn't quite there yet. But no. How long will it be?
We're still training it, right?
Do tax analysis. It's really good. Now, sure, yeah. I've still got to correct some things.
But we're still trying to maybe step it.
Yeah.
So the Profit First professional mastery level, how does cash flow methodology work and change the way you think about pricing in an advisory pivot if for your own clients, if you can make that shift?
That's an interesting question. So taking the AI stuff aside for a moment. So, you know, as a Profit First professional, we're trained in a certain methodology and that brings some clarity and guidance to how we help a client manage cash flow. That's a premium product. Anyone can read the book, but most people who read the book struggle to implement. So my job as a Profit First professional is not to tell them some secret thing that's not in the book. It's to hold their feet to the fire and help them think clearly about their business and get their cash flow right. I tell everybody, there's no rocket science here. There's no secret formula. Okay, it's just about doing the right things. And my job is to help you do the right things. And I think this is the advantage of having an external advisor, even if AI does the books. You know, what is the purpose of a professional? It's to help business owners think the right things, do the right things, and hold their feet to the fire.
Yeah.
AI won't.
And keep them out of jail.
That too. Absolutely. Yes.
So how is the customer behaving? How are they reacting, for instance, to if they find out, or maybe they do already, that you're heavily vested in the use of AI in your practice? Do they challenge you? Do they say, yeah, it's part of the world now? What are they?
I've not had anyone push back on AI. We're not shy about the fact that we want to be AI leaders and that we actively use AI. To the certain point now, I would almost say if you found a professional that said, oh no, I don't use AI, I'd be wondering why not. It's almost at that point where it's almost becoming expected, even by, you know, maybe not, you know, there's a certain group of people that don't want to do that, but you know, anyone in the business world knows you need that advantage now. So I actually actively tell my clients, and when I'm coaching my clients, I'll often say to them, hey, listen, I've run your scenario through my friend, I call it my business partner, and I tell them that this is what it's come up with. Now, I've reviewed this, And I think these are the issues that you really need to look at. And we can accelerate a conversation because I've used AI way better than if I have to do all the thinking and coming up with the ideas for myself. So I've given my clients prompts to run and had them come back and talk to me about it. And I had one client that had declining revenue, and I gave him some prompts on how to create a ideal client profile. And he took that and ran. I was so impressed with him. And he's not an AI, you know, advanced user in any way. And he took this to ChatGPT. He ran the prompts. He came up with it. He created three ideal client profiles. He then asked it to create audits for how to use, how to go on site and do an audit of the client's area. He's a locksmith, and come up with security audits. And now his staff are booking additional consultations and jobs because of that one conversation we had, that one AI prompt I gave him. And his revenue is up because of
it. Yeah, I mean, there's many cases out there where using the right tools and the right way using AI, it's increasing revenue, not reducing cost. And not just for reducing cost. I mean, we were just talking about it earlier in the call we just had this morning, is that most companies are focusing on the use of AI to create efficiency to reduce cost. However, I think there's a huge opportunity in generating revenue, increasing, you know, getting in new markets, getting into a new category of services that you probably never thought about offering out. Creating a differentiator.
He was working out, how do I take this personality and offer them the services I maybe I'm not doing today? And he used that in a wonderful way.
Correct. What's next for your team and for yourself, Peter? What's the vision here?
Yeah, well, we are committed to being the firm of the future that is not afraid of AI, but is embracing it. We want to grow in our advisory offerings and be able to use AI in a way that helps accelerate our business. Our mission statement is to help entrepreneurs build profitable businesses that bless their families, their team, and their community. And so we actually see AI as helping in that process. It's a challenge, yes, but it can also help in that process. So from Fuel Accountant's perspective, that our mission isn't changing. We want to be tech forward. We want to be tech leading. One of our core values is lead with technology. So we're pushing forward on that. Increasing implementation, increasing use of AI for the benefit of our clients. From the AI accountant's perspective, I'm on a mission to really educate accounting firms and help them learn how to transform their practice. I run a program called the Practice Transformation Program, where in a cohort, we do that hard work of analyzing and thinking through what does the firm need to look like and what changes do we have to make, and basically create a 12-month plan. So that's what we're going to be continuing working on this year, as well as exploring some additional tools on the side.
One of the interesting topic that we continue to talk about in any professional services right now with the use of AI is to go and change the way we are engaging with our customers in terms of how we price our services. For instance, I work in the language industry. The way language industry charges things is per word, which is transactional. And you seem to have moved or trying to move, I don't know if you've moved completely, to engagement, compliance engagement to advisory pricing. Did that work? Is it working? What is the customer reaction on it?
I think the pricing compression issues haven't fully hit the ground yet. We moved to monthly fees rather than hourly billing, you know, right at the start of this firm. So we've never really had that issue of the price compression on hourly billing. I think even, you know, the traditional value-based pricing is going to struggle in this new world. One of the compression factors that we are seeing is that people perceive, not always correctly, they perceive that something should take less time because of AI. And therefore, they expect fees to drop, not go up. That's a perception problem, but that's a real issue. And so, what we have as a firm, we've got to make sure that we're actually adding value to our clients, and we've got to be thinking about what are the outcomes we give our clients. Price the outcome, not the input, not even the value to the client per se, but price the outcome. If we keep doing that, we have a job.
Yeah, outcome-based pricing, input, right?
We're out of a job.
Yeah. You got to do outcome-based pricing, and we keep talking about it in any profession. Yeah. What is the outcome? What are you trying to achieve? Yeah. And how much effort is going to take you to get there and price that?
And the biggest challenge, I think, for accountants in particular, is that we think that the value we're creating for the client is the tax return.
Well, it's the tax return, right? It's always said, the tax return. Return. Yeah, I started my own small business here in November last year, and I feel like, you know, I could, you know, I have an accountant, and I, to be honest with you, I feel like the accountants have a lot more advice to give, a lot more business direction to give to small and medium businesses, any size business for that matter, that we're not capitalizing on this one as a business community. To be honest with you, I feel like we should be talking to accountants about what matters versus, did you do my T4 or did you do my whatever form the government is asking for? Because again, transactional, with the proper AI, probably I can do my own T4 if I want to. But where I need help with is business direction. Am I investing in the right direction? How do I achieve growth? Which market should I go after? What can I manipulate in my, what can I move? What are the pieces that I can move in my business that my accountant can notice? And I don't, you know, I don't have that knowledge. Then my accountant perhaps can tell me, if you move this piece and you invest in this, or you attract investment in this particular area, your business can explode. Those are advices that the normally a business consultant would charge for quite a bit. And the accountant is already in the business. You already know the business. You're already seeing the business.
And we've seen hundreds of other businesses, and we've seen what's working and what's not working. And we've seen the failures, and we've seen the success stories. So you're absolutely right. Your average accountant has so much knowledge, and we often discount that because, well, we're not that kind of expert. We didn't go to school for that. Yeah. And this is where I think AI is actually really useful because, you know, knowledge is now free. I don't have to be an expert in something to guide a client through a process. That's the value that we can bring. We know the client, we know their numbers, we're intimate with that level of detail so that we know what the client can sustain and what they can't sustain. And this is where I said, you know, that 15% of judgment, that's what we have to expand because that's how we maintain the relationship and justify our existence in a sense. You know, we want to add value to our clients. How do we add value to our clients? Well, they don't value the tax return. They don't value the bookkeeping anymore. They perceive those things to be overpriced. What do they value? They want to grow their business. How do we help them do that?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah, I can see you guys having like a business transformation arm to your company.
Mm-hmm, possibly. Yeah.
Yeah. That could be because you have a lot of expertise you can draw on. You have a lot of data you can draw on. You have a lot of cross-pollination, I call it, between customers that you can draw on to what did the other guys do to become successful? Can I learn something? Can I pass it on to somebody else? Absolutely. And there's a value for that. Mm-hmm. Now, anything else as I come close to the end of this conversation, Peter, that I haven't been able to address yet or haven't targeted yet that you wish to speak about?
I think you've touched on so many issues already, actually. No, I think we've done a really good job.
No, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This is exactly the kind of conversation I was hoping we do today. And thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it, Peter.
Wonderful. It's been a pleasure.
And it's a pleasure meeting you as well. And I look forward to continue being in touch. As I post this episode, I'll tag you obviously in everything I do. And feel free to share. If you have a team that or somebody that wants access to content, just let me know what you need. And happy to share whatever content I produce with you and your team. So
absolutely.
And for the audience, I want to thank you so much for joining me in on recording this conversation. I think it's episode 226. So thank you for joining me in on this conversation, on this dialogue with Peter McCarroll. And also, if you're joining us through YouTube, thanks for watching us. If you're joining us through the podcast channels, thanks for listening in. And if you're reading the blog post where I summarize these conversation, robinayoub.blog, thank you also for contributing there. And thanks for sharing the content and liking the content as well. Thanks so much, everybody. And I'll see you at the next episode. Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, everyone. Bye.